Pod-tacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 472, ESL Interview Special, recorded on April 2nd, 2015. Hello everyone, welcome to Pod-tacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm, and today I am here with a couple people from ESL. We're going to talk about some Halo Championship Series stuff, Season 2 to be specific. We just got the wrap-up of Season 1 at PAX East, which was amazing to watch, I must say. But we have Josh Gray, otherwise known as Clutch, and Timo here on from ESL. So thank you for joining the podcast today, guys.
Thank you very much for having us.
It's great to be here.
So one of the things that, first off, I want to say is you guys put on an amazing season for this first season. And I know going back to some of the MLG days when MLG was doing Halo, getting some of that vibe, a lot of the audience interaction with the people that were playing. And it's nice to see that come back with the finals. So the environment that was there at PAX East, for those who didn't get to go, it was simply amazing, especially that game five series for the losers final. That was intense.
Yeah, that was definitely a pretty insane game. I don't think we've seen that in a long time or ever. If I can quote Bravo here, calling it the something along the lines of like the most intense competitive Halo game ever. So I think, not knowing all the competitive Halo games that have been played ever, that I can definitely agree to that.
And that's what we live for. We can only do so much to entertain the crowd, right? We'll have polished production, great commentators, the host is engaging the crowd. But if the games aren't fun to watch, then that's like, oh, kind of a bummer. But the games were so good that this tournament has been ingrained in the minds of fans of Halo as one of the best tournaments they've ever seen in the entire existence of the game. So that was a huge compliment to everybody involved, but especially the players. They played phenomenally well at that event.
Yeah, and it was fun to watch, especially seeing how the audience reacted to everything that was going on. I mean, you could probably hear everything that was going on in the finals across the expo floor because it was just that loud and there were that many people. And for those at home, there were people standing in the queue lines behind the stage area for ESL because that's how many people were there to watch. Like, we probably had as many people standing as there were sitting, if not more.
So are you telling me that while the tournament was going on, you were actually on the other side of the expo hall just trying to check out the sound?
So I was over at the Halo 5 booth kind of checking out the last day, and you could, like, they had the stream up over there on one of the laptops, and I could hear like cheers going on, and then like 30 seconds later, it's like, oh, there it is on the screen. There, we know what just happened.
Wow. Okay.
So it was fantastic. And I mean, it was kind of a murmur at that point because that Halo 5 booth was on the complete opposite side of the expo hall from ESL, but you could hear it. You could hear a faint kind of cheer coming from a certain part of the expo hall. So you guys did a fantastic job of putting that on. So I just want to congratulate you guys first off for an excellent event for the finals.
Thank you very much. I mean, we put our hearts and souls and a lot of work into that. And then to see how it all plays out, not just from the, production and tournament point of view, but to see that what you put on actually is received in the way that it was, that's probably the most rewarding part of the whole thing.
It has to be, I think. I mean, I bet you guys are like just super proud of the team and then of all the players and everyone that came out. I'm sure you guys feel very elated after that for the success of the finals.
The crowd was probably the best indication of how successful the event was, both watching online and in person, to see that crowd be so enthralled and engaged to what was happening. It's why we do it, and it's why we enjoy having live crowds and to have that social setting to watch these players perform at such high levels, and for the amount of stakes to be on the line for such high stakes for that amount of money as well. That's what esports is. That's what competitive gaming is, and I'm glad that Halo is still a part of that competitive gaming family, and to see the crowd be so engaged. It was phenomenal.
Right. So talking about how Halo is kind of part of that competitive family, one of the questions I had sent over to you guys is, what was it like when 343 and Twitch and ESL came together for this big conglomeration to make an official Halo League? Because before now, we hadn't really had anything official. We had MLG support it, and that was supported for a while through Bungie and 343 for Halo 4 when it came out. And then we had AGL there for about a year, and now you guys are coming along and taking the mantle of competitive Halo. So how did that go down? How did the three entities, 343, Twitch, and ESL, come together to make this new league for Halo?
So, because you first asked about our reaction to when this whole thing came about, I mean, my first reaction was, yes, please. Can we do this now? You know, because getting to work on, you know, a game that is, you know, so, I'm not sure if I'm using the right word here. Forgive me. I'm not a native speaker. That is such revered, you know, or as revered as Halo is, you know, is an absolute pleasure. So, you know, that was just like, yeah, let's start doing this now, you know, absolutely was absolutely thrilled about it. Also because it meant the opportunity for me. So I started out in Germany, with ESL Europe or ESL headquarters. So, you know, that meant for me the opportunity to come and work in the States for that project. So that was super exciting on a personal level. Now, when it comes to, how this all came about, you know, the starting point really was 343, approaching us and Twitch, about working together on this, you know, and wanting to create the league or that body that HCS is. And, you know, them saying, we want to do Halo Esports right, and we want to do it big. And, you know, this is the way we should be doing it. So that's how all that conversation got started.
Very cool. And so this is something that I think a lot of people, it was just really good to see something come back after not having competitive Halo for a while, and just to have this established and then announced was so huge. I think the competitive community went absolutely nuts when that happened. But what's your past experience with competitive Halo? Have you done anything with competitive Halo before ESL?
So I can only speak for myself here. So for ESL, you know, This project is the first step into competitive Halo. You know, we're more rooted, at least, you know, for the majority of the company's history, we're more rooted in the PC gaming market, you know, and we've started working with consoles a while ago, but Halo really was probably one of the first really big titles or leagues that we were able to draw up. And I've dabbled in Halo, but you know, being from Europe, Halo really isn't that big over here. So, you know, all that, like the MLG days and this and that, that didn't really get to Europe that much. So I wasn't exposed to that much.
I actually had a lot of exposure to the Halo esports scene because I had done a lot of work with Major League Gaming in the past. My work was more centered on StarCraft II and League of Legends, but Halo was always there. It was always there. Halo was a linchpin. Halo was a foundation stone in the MLG Pro circuit. But because of just changes that were happening in the scene, changes that were happening in the audience, and changes that MLG wanted to make from an executive standpoint, they no longer had Halo. And so it was a little bit of a weird scenario to speak very, very candidly. Is it was a bit weird to not have Halo at those events anymore because it was so tied in with Major League Gaming. But the entire scene of esports has evolved to such an extent, to such a worldwide phenomenon. And ESL is part of that worldwide phenomenon. And even though consoles may be more popular in the States and they have a really good, foothold in the UK, still to see an arena shooter that is being played at a top competitive level, that's being broadcasted at a top production level from the ESL team, that is exciting to see. And it's exciting to see that amount of history and legacy with all these players still be at the forefront and still be talked about by press and shown you know, on different websites that cover esports to say, hey, Halo is back. Halo is back, and this is why people love to watch Halo in the past. This is why people love to play Halo in the past, and now they get to do it in an even, you know, stronger sense, and even a stronger sense with the involvement that we have from 343. So that's very exciting for fans of Halo.
I think that quote is going to need to have to make it into a book at someday. Halo's back. That's become so iconic. Love it. That
it's so iconic and so fun at the same time. It really is.
Well, you kind of touched on the point where people were just so used to having MLG being the foundation for that competitive Halo. And then when that left MLG, it was kind of up in the air for who's going to pick up the slack. And for a time being, AGL did it. And then you guys came along and took it for what we have now as an official Halo League being sponsored by the developer of the game. So this is kind of going in a direction where I know for me personally, I like seeing it officially being backed by the studio, and then have partners like Twitch and you guys come along and partner up to have something that people can really latch on to and identify as a competitive esport league that can really compete with a lot of the other big ones out there. That's just really awesome to see. And as a Halo fan personally, that really excites me.
And, you know, it's really, I think this trifecta of Twitch, 343 and ESL really is so valuable because everybody brings a different set of skills, I guess, is the way you could say, to the table, right? Twitch, obviously, with you know, all their streaming experience and in that area, and then, you know, working with 343 has been an absolute pleasure. And, you know, they have all this super deep, I mean, they're the makers of Halo, for crying out loud, you know, so obviously they have probably as deep Halo knowledge as you can go. And then we, on the other hand, we have, you know, 15 years of competitive gaming experience or organizing leagues and, you know, doing esports and broadcasting esports. So, you know, that working relationship is really great, and I think really benefits HCS as a whole.
So you're basically looking at the best of the best when it comes to throwing on a league like this.
Well, you said that.
Yeah, I did.
Yes. You know, the numbers prove it. The production proves it. We're always trying to strive to be the best that we can be when it comes to being a league and also being the broadcast solution, to be the broadcast team that shows these players to the world. And are we perfect? No, but we're working every day to get closer to that goal. And, yeah, and it's fun to see that growth as well, compared to, you know, the Invitational for the Master Chief Collection, which was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And the players enjoyed it as well, along with the commentators. So we at that moment knew, like, hey, we're onto something here. We're working well together. People are enjoying this event. Let's continue this process. Let's improve what we did for the Invitational, and let's apply it to the season finals. And the more you do that with any company, with any goal, but if you have those same people that continue to strive to get better and they work together, you start to have a fantastic team that can put together these shows. And that's what ESL is, and that's what ESL does.
Yeah, just to add on to that, you know, in terms of that trifecta, I mean, I think obviously, 343, they, you know, made a wide choice, you know, partnering with the biggest streaming platform in the world, and then the biggest esports company in the world, you know, that is ESL. You know, you probably did a wise choice in your partners there.
So one of the things I want to comment on is I'm rather impressed with the ability for you guys to adjust quickly to what people want and changes that need to happen within the league that you have. So one of the examples for that is I was there. I got invited to go to the Invitational as a spectator at ESL headquarters last year. And one of the things that you guys spun up really quick in a day was listen-ins. So the ability that you guys have, and I'm guessing this is part of the experience that you've had in the past with other leagues that ESL runs, is just that adaptability to quickly integrate new things into a league to really address what the fans want and to address what you guys want to do with the league.
So before we answer that question, so it seems like you've been at two Halo events yet. On the third one, come find us, okay? Say hello.
Because he said hello to me. That's how he got his card.
Okay.
But yeah. Okay, well, yeah, next time
I guess I just got left out.
Oh, sorry. Well, Timo, you were busy. I mean, the whole project happened under Timo's leadership. And honestly, it probably wouldn't be as good as it was without his dedication and focus. And you know, to be thrown into something where there's a lot of expectation coming from a built-in audience over the last 10 plus years, that is quite a daunting task. And, you know, for our team, especially Timo, to be up to the challenge is a big deal. And I don't mean to keep patting ourselves on the back here in this interview, but it is something that not everybody can do. And not everybody has the experience or has the courage or has a vision to say, hey, we want to accomplish this and work with the client to make it happen. And it happens. So it's a big deal. It's a good thing. But that's what makes, you know, that's what makes ESL ESL, team of professionals ready to accomplish these huge events.
So I think going back to your original question, about, you know, listening and, listening to the community and changing things up, you know, I think that really, comes back to what Josh said before. You know, we're not perfect and we know it, you know, and I think we all know that esports doesn't happen without the community, and there's no point in putting something on that, you know, nobody enjoys watching or that the players don't enjoy. So, you know, whenever, you know, you can't always make all the changes that everybody wants to see. You know, I'm sure, people have a million great ideas, about things that we could be doing with HCS, but you know, there's only 24 hours in the day. So you can only get that much done. But yeah, I mean, I think the community, you know, is where esports has come from, and it is what still carries esports today. So, you know, you would be foolish not listening to the community as to, you know, what they would like to see.
And you mentioned the daunting task of really putting on a Halo League. So what were some of the growing pains that you guys went through as you were standing up this first season and as you were going through all the different events that you had planned for the first season?
Well, that definitely starts with the online league, and I'll have Timo speak about that. But when it comes to our end for the live event, we want to tell the players' stories. We want to tell the stories so that there is an emotional investment the audience has to these players. And to find those stories and to use that history of these teams, which have such long, extensive histories with Halo, that already is ripe with so much stuff that we can talk about. But we have to hone it into the season as well. Like, how do the stories affect them playing in this tournament right now? And so just to go through the season and to get information online and to still stay in contact with the players and do pre-interviews with them and get that information is something that we paid attention to a lot for the season in order for those stories to be there. But Timo, when it comes to, you know, how the games were played and playing online and reporting stuff, that was the entire ESL infrastructure working to how it was supposed to work with the GoFor system and the HCS points. So what was that like, Timo? Because I just saw the results of that. I didn't have to deal with the reporting.
You know, I think there definitely were some growing pains. You know, ESL was new to Halo and Halo was new to ESL. So, you know, unless you have an investment in, you know, Counter-Strike or Dota or League of Legends, you know, that kind of stuff. Some people didn't even necessarily know who ESL is, you know. We didn't yet have such a big presence in North America. And so, you know, so first off, who is ESL? You know, who are these guys taking over our beloved game, so to speak? And then when it comes down to very small things that maybe made things a bit difficult in the beginning was, players just didn't know how the ESL website worked, for instance, you know, so just facilitating, online play, there was, some education that we had to do among the community of how things work within ESL, you know? And so I think that was probably one of the big ones. And then, you know, when a game is new to a company or new to ESL, you know, you can't instantly, let's say, inherit all that history and knowledge that pertains to that game. You know, we certainly have people who know a lot about Halo within ESL, such as Josh, or you know, we have some people listening to this might know Everett, aka Small. You know, he's working with us on HCS. So, but that knowledge just kind of needs to, is that the word? Permeate. Proud of myself. Yeah.
Well
I'm
done.
Literally patting myself on the shoulder for that one right now.
Your vocabulary is proving strong, so keep it up.
You know, that just doesn't happen overnight. So, you know, while we have all this esports knowledge within ESL, it really came down to applying that to Halo and, you know, making sure that those two are in sync.
And I think one of those things that we kind of saw with ESL specifically was the introduction of HCS points and implementing that system into determining how teams rank leading up to the finals. So that was something new that we hadn't seen in competitive Halo in the past, where for events like MLG, it was just you would come as a team, there would be multiple stations of people coming and playing, and then you would have it dwindle down to the last day on Championship Sunday. So where did the idea of using HCS points to come up with the ladder and then determine that final 8 teams that would come into the finals? I guess, Timo, that's probably your area.
I think that's, you know, something that is just a system that has proven itself within esports, you know, across a lot of different games. And I think probably one of the biggest points of contention around that was that we give out points to teams rather than to individual players. And, you know, to us, that is just the matter of the fact that it is a team game, you know, and that's why we really wanted to focus on those team points rather than individual points, in order to reward the team as a whole and also encourage consistency among teams. You know, we don't want to, I think a team that goes through a season and, you know, has, you know, competed in whatever, 7-8 cups, and then they break up, and then they just reform a new team, and all of a sudden you have a team at the finals that maybe has never played together before, but combined those players have enough points to qualify for finals. Is that a team that really deserves to be at the finals? Did that team qualify for the finals? So that's really where we're coming from with those team HCS points.
And I'll admit, one of the things that I've seen through shifts in competitive teams in the past, and I think I even made this comment to a few people that I know that focus a lot on the competitive side of Halo during the first season, is that there's a lot of changing of hands of players, whether it be just players not getting along that well, or other things like just certain life events that they might not be able to go on. For example, Pistola in his hand, which I'm hoping that's doing better. But I would like to see a little more consistency. And like you're saying, Timo, I like the fact that the points are rewarding the team and not the individual players, because I would like to see it get to a point where the esports does take on the sports role, where you see a lot of sports teams like the college professional sports and the college and professional sports have this team that goes with it throughout the season. And you have to assume that they go through the hardships of dealing with each other and trying to learn each other's strengths and weaknesses. And it'd just be nice to see that happen within an esports team as well. So I would like to see that happen over as the HCS evolves and as the league kind of evolves, that we get to see a little bit more of that team dynamic instead of just players that are good at Halo.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it makes you wonder, with, for instance, if we take Noble Black, right? The team Noble Black that we saw at season finals doesn't exist anymore, like it did before. So, you know, it makes you wonder that if those players had individual points, would we even have seen these amazing games that Noble Black gave us, and this, you know, this story coming from 8th seed, you know, and then going into loser bracket finals or lower bracket finals, because maybe they would have already broken up, you know, before that. So, yeah, I think that's another point, you know, towards those, team points and, you know, towards what you were just saying, trying to see that consistency, because, yeah, I mean, I was very surprised, you know, to see that team break up as it did. Now, I don't, you know, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but a team that had such a strong showing and that proved so much, or showed so much courage, you know, in those overtimes, you know, you got to wonder, why did these guys break up?
And it's tough, too, for the scene itself, because a lot of players became a little bit disillusioned because of the falling away of Halo. Say what you will of the responsibility of that. But what matters is that there was something there and now it's gone. And so guys that have dedicated themselves for such a long time in their young adult, you know, late teens, young adulthood, going, well, I need to kind of move on and try something else if this is not going to exist anymore, if there is no avenue, no way for me to continue to be a Halo player. And so there's a little bit of that disillusionment with some of the players, and like, well, you know, I'll do one last hurrah, but this is it. I need to move on. Some of the players, some of them that are slightly younger or really, really invested, are like, hey, we need to focus as a team. We can do this. This is going to be around, you know, let's focus 2 years in doing this. And for that team to focus so hard and then lose, that's another heartbreaking story, you know. So these players and these teams are still trying to figure some things out in the state of the game and of the league, where, okay, we're doing it online, we're doing it with ESL, here we go. And to see season one be so successful, I feel teams are like, okay, season two, this is a real thing, this is a real deal, let's focus on our team. And I think we'll have a lot more stability with teams in season two. But for season one, because of the past and what has happened, it was a little bit more free agent style in regards to the teams.
Yeah, and gotcha. I absolutely agree with – I mean, it's my hope, and I also expect that we will see more consistency because, you know, again, I think the way the season was structured, you know, with team changes and stuff like that – it's also something that teams have to get used to. And, you know, we put those rules in place because we think ultimately it's going to be better for the scene as a whole if we do see more consistency across the teams. And, you know, and with, you know, with the prize pools increased once again, or not once again, but again for season two, you know, I think teams will, you know, they see how much it is worth to really invest in this. And, you know, I think a consistent team will, you know, 9 out of 10 times will beat a team that is composed of individually higher skilled players. So, you know, that investment into a team that sticks together at the end of the day will mostly likely pay off.
Yeah, that working and playing together is how you build a team. And if you have superstars there, they can be great individual Halo players. But if they're missing that teamwork, that team sixth sense, or they're not listening to their coach in time, you're not going to win, because it's not a, you know, it's not a 1v4 game. It's a lot of people are on your team trying to accomplish the same thing. And that's how you get the job done, especially for the objective maps.
Yeah, and that's why I would like to see a lot more teams actually stick together as teams versus we see a lot of moving around, like you mentioned, the whole kind of free agent for the first season.
But yeah, give it time.
I think we'll see it just kind of mature over time. And with the success of season one, I don't see why season two will probably see that decline a little bit. And then as the seasons kind of go on and on, to see that slowly diminish. And I know the teams are sponsored by a lot of different companies, so maybe get to see where the teams are actually staying as teams, and you don't see this big shuffle of, well, this team dropped off and, oh, most of the team from here is now making this new thing. So it'd be nice to see something like that kind of persist throughout the season and then through subsequent seasons as the HCS goes along. So one of the things that I was going to ask you but got answered by 343 a little bit earlier this week is talking about some of the maps that we've seen in HCS Season 1. So 343 did post that we're going to see some Forge maps in HCS potentially coming to Season 2. So what's the process you guys are going through to forge maps, to test maps? Are you having 343 forge maps? Or are you having like a community cartographers group forge maps and do play testing? What's the new Season 2 maps going to look like going into this?
So that's still a work in progress right now, and that's a process that 343 is leading very much. Because as I said before, you know, they're the makers of Halo. They really have that deep knowledge of what it takes to have a great competitive Halo map. And they're working with exactly what you said, and I'm probably going to mess this word up, community cartographers, and with their internal team to establish what those maps can be. And yeah, hopefully, you know, we're going to see the addition of a couple of new maps for season two, which I think is a, you know, much needed addition with from the three maps that we had from season one. And you know, it should make for more variety and hopefully even more exciting games.
So as far as kind of like the maps go, are you guys having any input to those? Is it strictly 343? Because I know with you having the background with competitive, you know a little more of how map flow needs to work. You know, like certain ins and outs. Probably given some other games, because I'm assuming you have other first person shooters within ESL, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it very much differs from game to game what makes a great map. You know, if you take, for instance, a first-person shooter like Counter-Strike, you know, that is obviously a first-person shooter, but it is still a very different game, and it takes very different things to have a good map. To answer the question as to our input, so we also took a look at maps that are out there, and we suggested some maps to be added. And some of those are currently being tested by 343 as well.
Cool.
And I always defer to the players too for a lot of their suggestions and stuff as well. Of course, some of them will gripe and just say things like, "Well, you know, that's part of the game. It's part of, you know, it's part of the map. If it doesn't infringe upon the tournament integrity, right? Like if it's actually broken, then obviously we're not going to put it into the season." But just listening to the players' feedback, I'm sure is part of the process and has always been part of the process, I believe, with 343 to see how things perform.
Right. And they have the pro team there, so they have a lot of background on knowing what works for a competitive map. So
Definitely.
If they can peel themselves away from working on Halo 5 and maybe look at some of the maps, then I think we're going to be in really good shape for a lot of these maps that we're seeing. Any particular favorites you guys have or you would like to see if 343 was forging them? Any old favorites? I know it's kind of an on the spot, but
yeah,
I think one thing that the community would really love to see is, and that I don't know if we're going to see it though, is, you know, a remake of Midship. I think, you know, that's probably the map that I've, you know, seen be mentioned most in the community. But at the end of the day, I think the community really is just looking for more variety in maps. And, you know, with any addition of maps that we can bring to the table, you know, we should be in great shape.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. I was thinking back to when I was first, you know, playing and watching Master Chief Collection and then seeing some of the Halo 5 footage. I went, "Oh, I want that Halo 5 map." So like, "Oh, that'd be kind of cool if it was like to prepare players for Halo 5 by designing the map that would be in Halo 5, you know, for Halo 2 Anniversary Edition." But that's me. I'm not talking I'm not saying that 343 is going to do that, but just in my mind, I'm like, "Oh, that'd be pretty cool." But I don't think that's going to happen at all.
Well, there's lots of stuff that we'll see in Halo 5, I'm sure. I don't know how many maps there were going to be. We already have a lot with the Master Chief Collection. We have over 100 maps there. So a lot of the being able to relive all those maps, we'll have those. And I think for Halo 5, it's going to just be looking for those new experiences. So I'm excited,
for
though.
Sure.
Going on a similar path, the game types, one of the things that was mentioned is the consideration of Ricochet into the game type list. So that's one thing that it's been, I don't know, it was kind of really well received when it first came out in Halo 4, but again, because of the lack of players in Halo 4, it didn't really stick too long. So what's kind of the anticipation that you guys are seeing for getting Ricochet into the league, or is that more a 343 thing as well?
So I think, again, you know, it comes back to offering, you know, game types and maps that for once, you know, give players the chance to, you know, like experience different maps and play different maps and prove themselves on different maps. And I think the community response has been quite favorable to that. And, you know, it just allows us to, you know, well, this might sound bad, but put on a better show, you know, with, you know, give the casters and the hosts something else to talk about than those three maps that we've seen all season long. And, so, you know, hopefully, I mean, you can do all the testing and, you know, theorizing about something that you want. It's ultimately, it's only going to prove itself when, you know, you put it out there and you see how, when, you know, 100, 200, 300 competitive matches have been played, does this actually work?
And I hope that we see it come out.
Yeah, I do too. Any more variety that adds to the competitiveness of the game is great. As long as it's not too much. There is a such thing as having too many maps to choose from, and that gets a little daunting, but that's not the case right now.
True. And we're just starting out with this, whereas I think back in MLG you had, what, a myriad of, what, 8 or 9 maps to choose from, and right now, since we're mostly sticking with Halo 2 Anniversary, it's a little limited. So it's going to be nice to see some new maps into the mix to give a little more variety. Not to say that the streams weren't fantastic, but seeing the same maps played in the same series of games did get a little tiring. And I think everyone is going to be happy to see the new maps get rotated in. And to have just more options there is going to make for some really, really good Halo and just even bump up the quality even more. So what was some of the stuff that you guys learned from Season 1 that you're looking to implement in Season 2, whether it be the stream setup, whether it be the stage setup and the matches played? What's kind of the lessons learned that you took from Season 1?
Ooh.
Should Josh start with this one?
Wasn't it all perfect? No.
Josh, I say there's always room for improvement, that I always say.
Oh,
so.
Sure.
I was just kidding. I would never say that we were perfect.
If I could think of like the most practical checklist, I liked the updates coming from the 343 channel, but I feel more of a weekly update that pushes to a larger esports audience to say, hey, this is what's happening with Halo. This team, you know, more of an update that's a little bit more, I guess a wider competitive audience could see that, to help tell the story and build the stories of what's happening in, you know, Season 2. And I think just some other things for polish. It's just a lot of it's just polish, extra polish, to what we're already doing.
I mean, one thing that, you know, instantly comes to mind, when, you know, we were talking about the audience attendance at season finals, we could have done with some more chairs. Actually, I mean, from Saturday to Sunday, overnight, we added, I don't know, something around, I think like maybe not quite 100 chairs, but, you know, something in that area, and still people were standing, you know, so, definitely need to account for that next time around. And, you know, I think it's a lot of, you know, we learned, like I was talking about before, you know, the interaction with the players and through the website and through the ESL system. I think that's where both sides learned a lot, you know, and I think that's going to be easier going into season two, because that learning process doesn't need to be repeated, or at least not, you know, not for the majority of the player base. I mean, I'm certainly hoping that we're going to see more new players, you know, who will be joining us. Other than that, from a production point of view, I think one of my big takeaways, I guess, from season one is that it's never boring if you put a mic in front of a Halo player and have them be interviewed, because there's always some great stuff that comes out of that. You know, as compared to other esports, something like StarCraft or Hearthstone, where players may be a little more acquired by nature, you know, an interview with a Halo player is never going to be boring. And I like that, you know, that in enthusiasm that they display in interviews as well. So I think that's really great. You know, as Josh said, like, there's always things that, you know, you can be working on and that you can be improving in terms of, you know, running the show and running the league. I think one of the things that, you know, we want to improve is downtime between matches. I think that, you know, maybe took a little too long during season finals. And again, that's something where, it's sort of a, there's sort of a reciprocity between players and us. You know, the players need to learn how we run things, and we need to do a good job of educating players around that or about that. So, you know, a lot of that is not, it's more incremental steps rather than, you know, this, okay, now we're going to change everything up because we think we need to take these huge steps forward.
So you either read my questions really well, or you read my mind, because one of the things I was going to bring up was just the amount of time between matches. And that was something that I had talked with a few friends about. I reached out to Ghost Ayame about it, and he's like, yeah, reach out to these people to address any issues. But one of the things that I know some of the Team Beyond guys, when I was talking with them at the Invitational and the Finals, one of the ideas that they came up with, which I think is actually really cool, is something of a help, or not help desk. That's me being tired from work. analyst desk. So how you have it, like during the halftime shows for like basketball or football, have something like that in between games. Because while a lot of the Halo Channel content is good, I've seen it time and time again, so it kind of gets old. So having that analyst desk there would actually be maybe an interesting thought. Have you guys thought of other ways that you could handle that intermediate time?
We've thought of a million ways, Dustin, but the same answer for everything is budgets. Is it appropriate? Does it fit the budget? All that stuff. When it comes to the downtime between setup, obviously we want it to be smooth, streamlined, and get to the action as fast as possible. But we cannot have players not ready to play the game. You know, we need to allow them enough, not too much time, because everything is live and we have a show to do, and you are also a performer as a player. So you should have your stuff ready to go where you plug in and you go. You need to check your settings, test your settings. That's fine. But you need to be ready in an appropriate amount of time. But for us to still entertain the audience in that amount of time, or also if there is a technical issue, we have a go-to plan. And having an analysis desk is a great way to help fill that time. But there's other ways to help fill that time as well, you know, with media and with sponsor roles and stuff like that. It's funny when I see a lot of people like, oh, no, another commercial, and they get so upset about it. But I think, hey, this is a live show. The television has been doing this for 95 years.
Yeah.
Commercial breaks are not just for, hey, audience, we want you to watch this commercial. It's more of, hey, audience, we need to take a drink of water. Hey, audience, our talent has to go to the bathroom. You know, those breaks are a natural break in any form of media. And there's laws against going too long that are in the United States. So obviously we want to have the most entertaining broadcast possible, but there have to be natural breaks for the audience and for the talent as well. Because the audience needs to get up and get a stack. The audience needs to get up and get something to drink or go use the bathroom. But trying to make the broadcast as tight as possible to where, you know, everything is within the appropriate means, the planned means, is a perfect show. And when you're doing anything live, something is not going to be perfect. And that's what you have to be flexible and adjust for.
But I think, you know, I mean, suggestions like that, you know, like the analyst desk are definitely great ideas, you know, and it's just part of our learning that, you know, downtimes need to be shorter. And, you know, what do we do in these downtimes? It's, you know, it's something that, you know, you just iterate on, and, you know, you try to make it better every time. And, you know, I think we were also after season finals, you know, we were looking at some more things that we could do, not just for the on-stream audience, but also for the on-site audience, you know. I mean, certainly during, you know, like the maybe Sunday, not too many people got up and left in between games. But, you know, we do see that on Friday and Saturday. And, you know, we were looking at ways, hey, maybe, you know, we should do some raffles on site, you know, where rather than just throwing out shirts, people like kind of have to earn those shirts, you know, on stage, something like that, you know. So there's different things that we're playing around, but there just isn't always the time or the money to implement all of those great ideas.
Yeah, but we always appreciate ideas and suggestions coming from the audience. And sometimes, you know, they'll say, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? But like, hey, we would love to. But you know, it's not the most efficient way, or it's or this or that or this or that or this or that. And but from doing this, as however long ESL's been doing it for a number of years and how long I've been doing it for a number of years, you learn something new that you'd love to apply at every single live event you do. And that's how you get better.
And that's great. And I'm hoping that we get to see lots of new things, because I know I'm very hopeful for season two. You guys did a fantastic job, I think, for a first season. So, I mean, in my opinion, you can really go up from here. So,
oh, that's the plan.
The gauntlet is thrown. So after the completion of season one, what was some of that feedback that you got from fans? What was some of the things that people really liked about the setup, that they liked about the streams, the events, and what were some of the things that people wanted to see differently for next season?
I'll go first on this one. The most amount of comments were actually about the game, the games itself, and how good the games were, which is fantastic. It's great. It
yeah, means
that's
they
could
awesome.
See the game, they could hear the game, they enjoyed the game, they enjoyed the core of the show. I had people say they enjoyed the interviews. I had people say they enjoyed, you know, the amount of shirts that we gave out, which was a lot. And so even small stuff like that, for them to go out of their way and to post something online or to send a message, it means something. It means, hey, I really enjoyed this enough so that I want to tell you about it, so you keep doing the same thing, more or less. But when it comes to suggestions, I think the biggest thing was downtime, but even then it wasn't a huge, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here for an hour, nothing's happening. It's more of, oh, there was some downtime, yeah, but after that was done, I mean, we got to the game. Those are the most amount of suggestions and feedback that I saw.
Yeah, I think we're going to to be perfectly honest, like, most of the things that I heard were positive things as well, or read, you know, and certainly like there's criticism, which is fair. But I think that because overall, I think the event was quite a success. People were rather happy to live with those, disadvantages. Now, one thing that I am going to say is I think we're going to have a hard time having another season finals event without bringing the Sims out. I think people, most of the community anyways, absolutely fell in love with Richard and his casting. So, yeah, I think that was a big plus for season finals. And I think, you know, one of the things that wasn't not necessarily just the finals event, but you know, the season overall was the map variety, you know, and that's something that we're improving on for season two. I think that was probably one of the biggest things that I read, you know, throughout the season. So, you know, I think we're making headway there as well.
Yeah, and I've heard good news about the commentary, the gameplay, the setup, and all that stuff from other people. So it sounds like a lot of the stuff that you said, Josh, of the community feedback was a lot of the stuff that I heard as well. So it definitely seems like you guys have a strong foundation, and a lot of the people were very happy with this first season.
So what was some of the community criticism that we may have missed, though? Because it seems like that you certainly read some things that we may not be aware of right now, or that doesn't come up in our minds right now.
So the big one for me, and I know talking with this with friends, was the downtime between the game series and then having to go commercials for game setups. And another thing was the occasional game crash or the drop player, which you can't really do anything about. That's just kind of the nature of the game. So there's nothing that you guys could really do to prevent that. The analyst desk idea, or actually one of the things I know with talking with people is a lot of people really like Walshy's commentary style, where he goes in and is really detailing what people are doing. And I think seeing a little bit more of that, and maybe that, whether that be maybe doing some other videos in between, like during the off breaks, describing some of the strategies and that kind of stuff, might be really appreciated by people that are maybe not quite on that pro level, but they want to understand why pros are doing something a certain way. So that was one thing that I heard, but there wasn't really any other big things that stood out. There were lots of tiny things, but so overall, I think it was, compared to what the state of Halo was, a very successful competitive league.
Right. And let me just be clear, you know, we're anything but complacent when it comes to season two. So it's like, oh, we did a great event, we'll just do the same thing again, you know? Absolutely. We are looking at how we can, you know, make the show and the experience better for everybody involved.
Well, if I hear anything, I'll definitely let you know.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Everyone is rooting for you right now.
I saw. I got a new Twitter follower a few minutes ago. So yeah. Was spectacular. So yeah, let me know.
Yeah.
Shoot me a tweet.
We definitely will. Yeah, I think you guys have a lot going for you. And I think one of the things is you guys put on such a great show to begin with, where it might take until season two to really pick out the finer details of what things people want to see change. Because I know going into from the state that AGL left competitive Halo in and going into HCS, you guys just stepped it up. You came out the door, guns blazing. You guys put on a fantastic show, and that was proven time and time again from all the LAN events that you guys put on, even to the finals. I mean, one of the things I heard was in the audience, the Twitch chat tends to get a lot of hate because of the state of Halo and the Master Chief Collection being broken, but...
And it's the internet?
Well, yeah, and it's the internet. I mean, go figure. But one of the things I heard was when it got to that fifth game of the Loser's Bracket series for the game five of the fifth series, or however you phrase that, you know what I mean. But
yeah.
People in the chat for Twitch, the mood completely changed. It's like, this is Halo. This is the foundation of the competitive community. And I think that was just evidence right then and there. It's like, you guys found competitive Halo again. So,
well, if we can make Twitch chat happy,
it might take a little while for the imperfections to really be evident, is what I'm trying to say. But I think you guys did a great job with the first season. And yeah, if I hear something, I'll definitely let you guys know. Of course, there are going to be...
Absolutely, please do. And, you know, I mean, we always want to encourage people to tweet at us, you know, at ESL Halo. I'm just going to do a little plug here. Or get on our forums. You know, you can find that easily on the HCS website. For those of you who don't know, that's esl.gg/HaloEsports. You know, come there, get on the forums, and let us know. You know, that's the best way of getting in touch with us. So, you know, we love to hear your feedback. And obviously, like, you know, we're reading Team Beyond and forums and stuff like that. But, yep. You know, that's really the best place to get in touch with us and let us know your feedback.
So we talked about the fans' reactions to season one. What were the pros' reactions to it? What did the players think of the way you guys put on the LANs, put on the online tournaments? What was the response back you got from the pros?
Well, the majority of them said it's one of the best events they've been a part of in all of Halo. And so that was a very big deal. With any pro, you know, using gear and performing on a stage that is in front of a convention audience, you know, you don't know what to expect of how many people are going to show up, but the place was packed, and the players love to feed off that audience love to feed off the energy from the audience, love to feed off that energy that helps with their performance and helps maybe get the comeback, and to have that celebration on stage and to throw those shirts out. It's huge. They live for that thing. It's great. Any type of technical issues that happened, you know, our admin team, our technical team was there to get them fixed as soon as possible and to come up with solutions if there was an issue. And with that, any live show, you know, you want everything to go off swimmingly. Nobody wants a technical issue to happen, especially if it has to do with a player's headphones or controller, or if they get, you know, knocked out of the game. That sucks. That's bad. But
yeah.
What's even worse if everybody panics, if the people that have the authority on the stage start panicking, going, I don't know what to do. We can't have that, because if the players see that, if they see, you know, the admin team and the tech team start to panic, then the players are like, oh no, now we have to take a break. We have to do this. I need to step away from the game. They're in that zone, and that's always unfortunate, but that's part of the vehicle of esports, right? All of this is dependent upon technology, and sometimes technology is not as reliable as you want it to be. So with the patience of any player for any competitive game to know that and to work through that, and for leagues to be prepared for technical issues and for no technical issues to happen, fantastic. It's a great show. But if you're able to deal with any technical issues in a timely manner and in a well-executed manner, then that's what really makes a production team professional. And the pros really recognize that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've gotten, talk to the pros at the events, of course. And, you know, you get smaller bits of feedback here and there. You know, one of the main things that I took away was, again, after the pros getting used to working with us, I think they absolutely appreciate how we run things. We're quite strict about certain things, you know, because we want to put, or we put the players first, but at the end of the day, the players are part of that tournament and are part of a show, and they benefit from that, you know, by getting exposure and all that good stuff, being able to give exposure to their partners and sponsors. So they also have to work with us in order to, you know, make that be a nice and good show. And so I think at the end of the day, one of the feedback that I received from players was, you know, it was hard in the beginning getting used to how strict you guys are. But at the end of the day, it really pays off when we appreciate it, because there isn't massive delays. You know, we do know what we're supposed to do and that kind of stuff. So
yeah, this is
pros appreciate that on that level.
This is a television show, period, and it's live. Yeah. I don't care who you are or what you do, but if you're part of the show, you're sticking to the schedule, because that's what the show does. And if there is an issue that you have to adjust the schedule, so be it. But you're an entertainer. You're playing a game. You're entertaining an audience, and you are there to compete, and that's part of your role. And the professional players recognize that, and they use that to their advantage. They take advantage of that. They have a great soundbite. They have a great, you know, word for your opponent kind of thing. And that people love that stuff. People want to cheer for people that have a personality on stage. And we try to create that for them to form a way for them to express themselves, not just in the game, but also outside the game on the microphone. And as Timo said earlier on, Halo players are some of the best players when it comes to expressing themselves and showing personality that's genuine and fun and has a little bit of a bite to it that an audience really, really loves.
Right. And it just provides an atmosphere that if the pros are showing that they're having a good time, the audience is going to really feed off of that too, I think.
Definitely. If everybody's having a good time, the audience is going to have a good time as well.
Right. So with going forward with Season 2, I know there's two events that are planned right now for Season 2. I guess kind of do some administrative stuff here. There's going to be 8 online cups, and then 2 LAN events that are going to be going on for Season 2. And then you have the finals in July. So with everything kind of leading up to the finals, and you already have the venue set, so you might not be able to do it now, but are you looking to get bigger venues? Because I think the PAX East showing just kind of proves that there are people out there that would come to it. And I didn't get a chance to go to any of the LAN events. I'm not sure how big the venues were. I know the Gamers Forgiving venue was huge, just judging by the camera angles. But are you guys looking to get bigger venues, trying to partner up with like Iron Games and some of the other tournament organizers, or are you still kind of just going with what you got for right now?
So for Season 2, pretty much everything is set. And, you know, in terms of going bigger, you know, everybody involved with this wants to do that. You know, be that the players, be that us, 343, the community, everybody wants to see, you know, the Halo grow and, you know, be reflected in bigger venues and, you know, more viewership. At the end of the day, you know, it really comes down to the community. Is the community going to grow, and can the community sustain that level of, or, you know, or foster that growth in the show and in the locations and that kind of stuff? And, you know, if we do see that growth, you know, because, you know, if you look at something like an ESL 1 in a stadium that fits 10,000 people, you know, would it make sense to move Halo there right now? Probably not, because we probably wouldn't be able to get 10,000 people. Maybe we would be, I'm not sure, but my guess would be that we wouldn't. You know, so it's really a matter of what makes sense for the community and for the size of the community in its current state.
So basically, you're telling me I need to come out to more events.
Absolutely. And bring your friends.
Definitely. For all the online cups, is there any format that's going to be a little bit different than how you did it last time?
So we actually announced that, and we're going to be, by the time this airs, the full new rule set is going to be out as well. So we're changing things up somewhat from Season 1. So going into Season 2, we will still have the weekly cups. Just that format is going to change a little. So what's going to happen is that the top 8 teams, based on, you know, the current standings, which in turn are based on the HCS points, are going to be pre-qualified for what we call the legendary bracket. So the legendary bracket is a 16-team single elimination best of 5 bracket. And so the top 8 teams are every week are pre-qualified for that. And that legendary bracket is going to take place on Sundays starting at 1 p.m. Pacific. Now, as I just said, it's 16 teams. So the other 8 teams will qualify through an open bracket that will happen on Saturdays starting at 11 a.m. Pacific. So that is very much in the same vein as the cups were last season. So, you know, open signups, everybody can participate. There's no qualification criteria except for some thing, you know, you need to have a team, you need to be in the US and that kind of thing. And so we play that bracket through round of 16. And the winners from that open bracket, from that round of 16, those 8 teams will then go into the legendary bracket on Sundays and play play those top 8 teams.
Okay. So changing stuff up in a little bit in the way of HCS points with that as well?
We have a revised point structure as well, yes.
Okay.
Tiers between lands are removed. There's only one set of points for each land. The point structure for online and lands itself has been revised somewhat. And the goal really here is to, you know, reward consistent participation, reward consistent performance, and, you know, maybe make the top 8 just a tad more dynamic to see, you know, maybe enable teams to break into top 8 a little more easily and kind of have that change up a little more.
Cool. So going into the way distant future of ESL, I'm guessing it's safe to assume that Halo 5 Guardians will be considered for ESL and HCS going down the road. Is there anything you guys would like to see from a streaming perspective included in Halo 5? Because we got spectator mode in the beta. So judging from what you've seen from that, is there anything else that you guys would like to see added to that for streaming purposes? Have you guys had a chance to think about that?
So, I mean, you know, that's not something that we can go into great detail about, but just the addition of spectator mode, I think, is huge. You know, for not just for us, but for the community in general. You know, it's going to make, you know, streaming for us a lot easier. It's going to make streaming for, you know, community casters and just general players a lot easier and I think a lot more engaging. I was listening to your discussion on that with some other guests of yours, and you know, just as those guys are excited for it, you know, just as you know what I mean, we're excited as well,
right?
And
right.
You know, some of the possible additions that you guys were talking about on that podcast, you know, on that episode, such as, you know, heat maps and like player stats being displayed in game and this and that. I think we would all love, you know, 100% customizability. At the end of the day, I think, you know, having that spectator mode is going to be a big step forward. And, you know, we'll see at the end of the day what 343 you know, will provide us with and the tools that they give us. And I'm sure, you know, no matter how it turns out, you know, it's going to be a big benefit to the community.
And the constant, you know, the constant inclusion of developers to say, hey, we want this game to be streamed. We want it to have a spectator mode. We want to have the tools available so it can grow for an audience, that's great. And that's where developers should be if they want to even consider esports or any type of spectator mode for their game. So I'm very, very excited to see it, to have it. And once it's tested, you know, hopefully it has a lot of tools that are available to the commentators instantaneously to help tell the story of what's happening on the screen.
I think it's going to come for a lot of great, well, as long as a lot of the stuff that I'm thinking of gets in there, I think it's going to make for some very good streaming and very good setup for you guys to even take advantage of and really utilize for ESL and HCS. So that'll be fantastic. Have you guys thought about doing any kind of like one-off events or kind of like small little like one-day tourneys for some of the classic multiplayer like Halo 2 and Halo 3 since we have the Master Chief Collection? Or is it just mostly focusing on Halo 2 right now? Or Halo 2 Anniversary, sorry.
Yeah, I think for now we're absolutely focused on Halo 2 and trying to build that community and, you know, build... lost my train of thought here. Anyways, I think we're focused on Halo 2 Anniversary right now. And, we always kind of want to look forward, looking forward, using MCC right now and potentially using, Halo 5 later down the road. So, right now, there's always thought experiments going on, within ESL. But right now there's no definite plans when it comes to stuff like that.
Gotcha. I think that kind of wraps up all the questions I had for you guys. One last thing I would like to ask you is, what were your individual favorite moments from season one of HCS? And Josh, we'll start with you.
Sure. I think the moment when we had our remaining teams, the remaining individuals that represent those teams on the Warthog for the first shot, the intro shot on Sunday of the Invitational. I really loved that shot. And when I was doing the voiceover, I was looking at my card and Ian, who was the technical director, I think had that idea and it really, really worked well. We wanted to try to have a similar idea at PAX, but it just wasn't going to work because obviously there's no Warthog there. And we thought, well, we really can't get the same cool shot. So we'll do it a different way. And to see our team get more creative with intros and utilizing the graphics, and then even the awards ceremony of how crisp it was. And in esports, we kind of have a bit of a running gag to go, man, how cringeworthy can these award ceremonies get? Because you got guys out there trying to open champagne that have no idea what they're doing. They're trying to hold a check and a trophy, and they're bumbling around. It looks bad. Let's not kid anybody. It looks bad.
A comedy of errors.
They go, oh man. And so for us, it was clean. Boom. While she comes with the trophy, I do the exit monologue. And then it's the last shot of the players celebrating, of Evil Geniuses celebrating on the stage. And, it looked good. And to have those type of things that are solid, those are really good memories that I have. I would love, after the stream shuts down, for a press conference to happen with the winners and the press is asking them questions. I'm like, that's kind of the next step of esports, really, is to set up those press conferences after the event is over. But the amount of quality of the production, how fun the players were having, how intense those games were, it's all wrapped up into that great memory that we all have of working with Halo in season one.
So I'm going to have to cop out here and do a couple.
That's fine.
So, definitely one of the favorite moments was, and that's from a production point of view, was when the Warthog was driven into our studios in Burbank. That was just epic. I love that thing. That thing actually drives, right? And some of our guys got to ride around in it. I unfortunately didn't. Otherwise that probably would have made top of the list. Another great memory from the launch invitational was T-Squared approaching me because, the admins are stuck in those player pods for a long time in the day and, it's hard for them to get breaks. And so apparently one of the admins had lunch in the player pod, and T-Squared came to me and said, "Dude, I can't have that. I can't have the admin eat in the player pod because when I smell the food, I can't concentrate."
Oh, so
that was great. And I mean, in terms of games, you know, it seems like the easy choice, but I mean, how can I go with anything but the lower bracket finals at season finals? You know, I mean, that was just, I was standing there and I was in awe of what was going on. And, you know, I just couldn't believe, that. And to be a little more specific though, there, we had, I believe it was Ogre 2's dad or Richie's dad who was there, and not too far away from him were sitting Arcanum's parents. And so to see the agony on these, I hope that's the right word, on these people's faces, you know, mirroring what was going on in game. And I think actually in a couple of the shots, from the tournament, whenever that overtime tied again, you know, you see, again, I'm sorry, I'm blanking whether it was, Richie's or Ogre 2's dad, you know, getting up and kind of like, putting his hands on his head and just be like, this can't be happening, you know? And yeah, so I saw that life and saw Arcanum's parents right there. Yeah. And if I had to nail it down to one specific gameplay moment, it was certainly the, I believe it was the end of the first overtime when CLG was up by one kill. And then, Ogre 2 is shooting at, I don't know, I think it was APG and Maniac, and he doesn't get the kill, and he gets fragged in the very last second of that overtime to get, you know, for the game to be tied again. I mean, that was just the most epic thing. Yeah, so that, if I had to nail it down to one in-game moment, that would be it.
Same. Same, man. That was huge.
That was an insane, insane one. Because you didn't see the kill register in the feed because, like, it must have been either the last, it had to be one of the last three frames of the game, of the time going, because there was no way that you could have told. Like, everyone wasn't exactly sure what happened, because it came up at the end, it said tie game, and it's like, what? The game wasn't tied. And then you check the kill list, and indeed it was tied. So somewhere in that last three frames or so, they got a kill. And that just shows you how, I think, intense a Halo game can get.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about you? What would be your favorite moment?
I have to say it was that five-game series of Game 5 for the loser's bracket.
You can't say that. I already said that.
Gosh, it's hard to pick something else, because that was like probably one of the most memorable Halo experiences, and it hasn't happened before. That has not happened before, going into a game five for one game to play, even through MLG history and AGL history. That has never happened before. But if I had to pick another one, It would probably be just how Noble Black was just kind of beating up everybody on the higher ranks throughout the whole thing. After Saturday, I was rooting for the underdog. I'm like, they could very well take this to the finals and really give EG a run for their money. I think would have seen a lot better playoff in the finals. I think it would have been a lot closer if Noble Black had made it to play Evil Geniuses, but to see a 8th seed team come up and just knock out the number 3, the number 6, the number 4 seeds just constantly like that, that was cool. That just goes to show how dynamic Halo can really be and how much teamwork actually matters.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Definitely.
So that's all the questions I had for you guys. I really appreciate you guys taking the time out to do this, and I hope we can do this again when season 2 comes around, and I look forward to seeing you guys again at events. And Timo, I will make it a point to come out and find you when I'm at an ESL event.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great.
Definitely, Dustin. It's always great to, you know, to talk to anybody that's engaged in what's happening in the competitive scene for Halo. It's had such a rich history, and to still see it alive and on the verge of thriving again, it's great.
Yeah, and you guys are spearheading it. You guys are at the front of the competitive Halo scene right now. So, I applaud you guys for a great effort that you guys did for Season 1. Really looking forward to what you're going to be doing for Season 2 and down the road. And best of luck to you guys. I'm really excited. Really excited for you.
Thanks, Dustin. Yeah, I mean, I just want to, you know, thanks for having us. Great talking to you. And, you know, I just want to give a huge shout out to the Halo community and to the pros and, you know, everybody who's been supporting HCS. And, you know, obviously, big shout out to 343 and Twitch. Like I said, it's a pleasure working with those guys. And, you know, couldn't be more excited for Season 2 myself. And, you know, can't wait to kick things off.
Good. For the wrap up here, the first LAN event is going to be Iron Games HCS Atlanta, which is going to be April 17th through the 19th. So if you guys are listening, you probably have about a week or two before the event is actually happening. So that's going to be the kickoff event for Season 2. So I'm looking forward to this. I'm really excited.
And just to sneak in another shameless plug, so actually HCS preseason, I don't know when this is getting aired, but HCS preseason starts on Sunday, April 5th, and we have a second preseason cup on Sunday, April 12th. And actually those preseason cups are going to serve to seed Iron Gaming. So, you know, if you plan on going to Iron Gaming, definitely make sure to sign up for those preseason cups and, you know, get involved and get those seeding points.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys again, Clutch and Timo, for coming on. It's been great talking with you. Hope to see you on the podcast in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.